Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Asma Khalid.
I went to the woods because I wanted to live deliberately. I wanted to live deep and suck out all the marrow of life. To put to rout all that was not life, and not when I had come to die, discover that I had not lived.
That's Robert Sean Leonard as Neil in the movie Dead Poets Society, reading one of the most famous lines of Henry David Thoreau's book, Walden. In it, Thoreau talks about the woods by Walden Pond as a place where a simpler, more honest life was possible. But for some other folks, those same woods were the only place a life was possible. They were home. These woods were home to the social outcasts from Concord. Here's how historian and Thoreau biographer Laura Walls put it.
It was an area that you could go and squat on the land, live out a life on the margins of society without anybody minding too much. It was, if you will, on the wrong side of the railroad tracks. So to know that about Walden tells us something about Thoreau's intent in going to Walden to become a part of that community in a real way.
But while we remember Thoreau on the 200th anniversary of his birth, we have largely forgotten the other members of that Walden community, the African-Americans and the Irish, who also lived by that pond before Thoreau and even alongside him. Elise Lemire is trying to revive that history. She is professor of literature at Purchase College and the author of Black Walden, Slavery and Its Aftermath in Concord, Massachusetts. Elise, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you for having me.
So, Elise, you grew up in Lincoln, right, about a mile and a half away from Walden Pond, but you didn't even know this history until your now husband, who's African-American, took you there and you all somehow discovered this. Is that right?
That is true, and I hate date myself, but I did go to the public school in Lincoln during the 1970s when local Black history was not part of the curriculum.
Okay.
And so I was unaware that there was slavery in Massachusetts, as embarrassing as it is to say, until I was in graduate school and Thoreau introduced me to that history in his chapter on the former inhabitants and winter visitors.
Got it. And how did you discover these stories? Was it by reading that portion in his book?
Well, that's really the incredible part. Thoreau is very specific about three of the different households that were in Walden Woods prior to him moving there.
Uh-huh.
And he gives enough detail that I was able to take those names and some of those stories, and I thought of them as kinds of threads that I would pull in various archives. And from there, I was able to unearth not as much information as I would like. So much of this history has been forgotten. And of course, so many of the people who write history are white people. So I never, in fact, found, for example, a diary or a letter written by one of the people who had lived in Walden Woods. But Thoreau really was the turnkey for me in the archives.
Okay. So can you tell us about some of the specific African-Americans who you discovered did live in Walden Woods?
Yeah. And first of all, let me just say that one of the things that strikes me and that others might be interested to think about when they reread Thoreau's book is that he's really working hard to situate the location of his cabin site within the middle of this enclave. I'll call it an enclave, but
That's so interesting. I think I need to reread it because I never picked up on that, to be honest.
Well, you know, it's a chapter scholars don't talk about a lot, and we can get into that maybe later. Thoreau does some really tricky things there with wordplay. It's quite a difficult chapter to read in some ways.
Okay.
But he does situate the site of his cabin very specifically in the midst of these three other former home sites. So, for example, he talks at length about a formerly enslaved man in Concord named Brister Freeman.
Mm-hmm.
And he talks about the fact that Brister Freeman was formerly owned by Squire Cumming. Well, I had never heard of Squire Cumming, despite having grown up in the area and thinking I was a good scholar of 18th and 19th century American history. And, you know, frankly, if Emerson and Hawthorne and Bronson and Louisa Alcott hadn't moved to Concord, we would all know who Squire Cumming was because he was probably the most important person in Concord before Emerson became so famous. Squire Cumming is one of the founders of Harvard Medical School. In his will, for example, you know, in his will, he left quite a bit of money. He didn't have any surviving children, so he was a very wealthy man and left money to Harvard specifically for a professor of physic. So Thoreau, you know, provides the names of the former enslavers, He provides lots of hints about the kind of work that people do, mm-hmm. or did, rather. So at one point, for example, he'll tell you in Walden that he wanted to know more about Brister Freeman and another former enslaved who lived there, a man named Cato Ingraham. But all he could discover was, quote unquote, that Brister and Cato pulled wool. Okay. So one of the things they did, for example, to survive was work in the local slaughtering industry, pulling wool out of sheep. But, of course, Thoreau's also playing on words there, because what he also means when he says they pulled wool was that they pretended to tip their hat to white people when white people passed by.
Oh, interesting.
In a sign of deference. But, of course, when you pull the wool over someone's eyes, you're also tricking them. So the reason the chapter is sort of difficult is because of these kinds of playing – these plays on words that Thoreau is noted for. I mean, Walden is in many ways a very, very funny book. By pulling all these threads, you can sort of figure out that we're talking about people who lived on tiny, tiny slivers of land. I mean, Brister is the only man who owned – the only formerly enslaved person who owned land in Walden Woods. And he had an acre of, quote, unquote, old field. Well, you can't raise a family on an acre of old field in a subsistence economy. Mm-hmm. That's not enough land to raise protein for your family.
So, in addition to Brister, did you discover stories of other families who were living there, or other individuals?
There was a woman named Zilpa White, who my research shows is most likely Brister Freeman's sister.
Okay.
She had been enslaved nearby at the Codman Estate, which many of your listeners probably have heard of. It's in Lincoln. But because Lincoln's split off from Concord, we don't think of the Codman Estate and Walden Woods as being directly linked, but they're linked in part because so many of the former slaves at the Codman Estate later, when they were abandoned to their freedom, squatted in Walden Woods, which of course is right next door.
I see.
So that's a sort of false boundary in our heads. So Zilpa White had formerly been enslaved on the Codman Estate. She squatted on the edge of the road, the border of the road being public space,
mm-hmm.
and probably eked out a living as a spinner. That's what Thoreau tells us, and as a basket maker. And she lived to be 82 years old. And she, in my mind, and I in Thoreau's mind too, she's a very heroic figure, because so many women who'd been enslaved in Massachusetts were unable to move out of the houses where they'd been enslaved, and their mm-hmm. status didn't really change. Right, the 1790 census says there are no more enslaved people in Massachusetts, but women and older men weren't moving out of these households, and were essentially their lives continued as they had been. So she moves out on her own. She makes a go of it. As a result, she's harassed. Thoreau tells a story in Walden about her house being burned down. She was a victim of arson.
Because of the color of her skin?
It seems from my research in part, this has to do with her brother. When her brother's widowed, he moves to Walden Woods with his wife, Fenda Freeman. And when Fenda dies, Brister invites into his home another impoverished person in the neighborhood. You mentioned at the top of the program that this was an enclave of formerly enslaved people, but also of the Irish, the mm-hmm. poor Irish. So when Brister's widowed, he invites another widowed woman in the area to move in with him. She's white.
Oh,
and some of the harassment that we see happens at around that same time. So I think it might have to do with that there was quite a bit of consternation in the community about that interracial relationship.
Listeners, if you're just joining us, I want you to take a listen to Elise Lemire. We're talking about the Forgotten People of Walden Woods. Elise is a professor of literature at Purchase College. Elise, do you have a sense of when and why these people eventually left the woods around Walden?
I do. And it's not a pretty story. And it really is striking to me how much of a connection there is between the story you had at the top of the hour. One of the things Thoreau asked us in Walden, he says, this small village, and he's talking about the Walden enclave, this small village, germ of something more, why did it fail while Concord keeps its ground?
I see.
So he's asking us the same question we need to be asking ourselves now about segregation and sort of these patterns that we continue to see. So why did this little village in Walden Woods, why did it not succeed? Why, when Brister died and then his grandson died, was that the end of a little village that at one point had 15 African-American people living in it? And it has to do with the size of their land. It has to do with the fact that Walden was left wooded because the soil is sandy. So you can't grow food on it. You can't crop on it. So that had a lot to do with it. And then also, the marriage patterns in Massachusetts, again, I mean, I talked about Brister sort of having to deal with a certain amount of harassment because he did, in his second relationship, become involved with a white woman. And then the kinds of jobs that people could get, right? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, everything really conspires against them. And frankly, what I talk about in the book is how many of the children in the community died of malnutrition. It's quite a heartbreaking story, but having said that, it is so important to also notice that for Thoreau, he understood the difficulties they encountered, and he did regard them as heroic, and that was one of the reasons in his book he wanted to memorialize them. At the same time, as I think he's also cautioning us in the book not to romanticize them, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's easy to sort of look at figures in the past and say like, wow, what a, that's a great story, but I don't want to live next to, Brister Freeman.
Mm-hmm.
So he's cautioning us against romanticizing them, but at the same time, he compares Brister Freeman at one point to Scipio Africanus, the great general who defeated Hannibal. So it's a story about segregated patterns in Concord and the fact that this community ultimately was not able to get a toehold. But in the meantime, the persistence that they showed and the fact that Zilpa White, just to take one example, was able to live into her 80s.
In this community, yeah.
Is incredible.
So, Elise, I've read Walden, and I don't recall Thoreau sort of explicitly acknowledging this community as being an enclave for the black community. Unless I have forgotten that, which is totally plausible. Did he explicitly talk about this in terms of the racial context?
Oh, absolutely.
And
this is not the chapter that professors and teachers pull out of the book to mm-hmm. teach. If you're a high school teacher and you need to teach Walden, you're not going to maybe teach the whole book. So you're going to pull out some chapters. And this probably isn't going to be the one you're going to pull out. Although, having said that, now that we have all this other research, I think it teaches really well. He's quite clear in the beginning that what he's looking at when he walks around in the woods in terms of the surviving built environment is a black community. And he talks about it in terms of race. He's really clear on that.
Uh-huh. You mentioned briefly there the Irish community as well. And I'd love to just circle back on that. Do you have a sense of why some Irish families also moved to the woods? It seems like the woods were this common place where a number of somewhat outcasts, you could say, of Concord found a safe haven.
Well, to be completely clear, the enclave that I'm talking about with mm-hmm. the formerly enslaved people,
that
came to an end by 1822. And, of course, the Irish come a little bit later. So at that point, but still some of the same factors are in play. And I should mention that if you've driven through Walden Woods, right, on Route 126, right, Walden Road, it's a busy road and it's hard to park and cross the street and get to the pond. When Concord was founded, that was a path. But over time, as Massachusetts became more and more settled, that became what was known as the Great County Road. It was the major thoroughfare to get from Concord into Boston. When a new bridge goes into that connects Charlestown to Boston in 1785.
Liz, we have about just 10 seconds left.
Oh, yeah. The Walden Road reverts to what Thoreau calls a humble road. And so to the extent that people live there like the Irish, it's because it was out of the way and the selectmen didn't mind having shanties there.
All right. Well, thank you, Elise.
Thanks for having me.
That's Elise Lemire. She's professor of literature at Purchase College and the author of Black Walden, Slavery and Its Aftermath in Concord, Massachusetts. And that is our show for today. Radio Boston is a production of 90.9 WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Asma Khalid, and this is Radio Boston.